Okay, so today we are reading Bamidbar chapter 10. Now, what we have in this chapter is we can debate where really the chapter should have started or where this part of the book should start. But I think this is where the next part of the book starts, which is the story of the actual travels in the Midbar. We could have started this a little earlier. I think it probably starts in the middle of the previous chapter where we started to have the form of the travels with the cloud raising up and coming back down and staying. But now we have something framed as a mitzvah, and also in some sense a mitzvah ledoiris, a mitzvah which will be for the generations, will be always, not only a mitzvah now. So unlike the entire order of the machnas, the order of the camps, where everyone should be, which are mitzvahs, but not mitzvahs that are always going to last, not mitzvahs that we do always. This is a mitzvah that, although it has a very explicit, very interesting kind of mitzvah, precisely because although it has a very explicit source or framing in this story, it's very explicitly timed there. On the other hand, it's very also explicitly told to be a mitzvah for Ledoiras, a mitzvah for the generations, for always. So this is something to think about, why this is that. Maybe the only mitzvah that has this kind of framing connects, of course, to the mitzvah of Tekiyas Shofar and Rosh Hashanah, although it's not explicit here, but we can understand that it's connected. So that's one place in which to connect it and something important. So what we get is like this. We get is a command. Hashem speaks to Moshe, telling him to make two chatzaitzres, two, some kind of trumpet or horn or something out of silver. Make miksha, so fully silver, or it's a style of making. We have it in Melech Samishkan by the Menorah miksha. Rashi always interprets it as being not poured. So not, there's masecha. Masecha is when you pour gold or some precious metal and you form it into something. A miksha is when you do the opposite. So what's known in the modern terms as subtractive manufacturing versus cumulative or additive manufacturing. So masecha, when you pour something, that's called additive manufacturing. You add the material to some kind of form and make that. Versus subtractive manufacturing, which is where you have a material and you cut things off until it becomes like that, or you form it by itself into like that. And that seems to be the more beloved form by the Torah, for whichever reason, miksha. But anyways, or maybe it just might be that it was considered to be stronger or better that way. And now these chatzoitzers will have two functions, two goals, two jobs. One is lemikra aida, you will call together the people by this, and the second is lemasa hamachnas, you will make the travel. And really, they're both the same, right? They both have the same function, which is it's a kind of alarm. It's to let the people know that something is going on. You're either letting them know that they could come together for some kind of asifa, they're coming together to learn the Torah or to hear some new command, or they're coming together or hearing that there's being traveling now. So it's not really a difference, but it's just a different thing that it's being used to announce. Either you're announcing the Mikra Aida or you're announcing the Masa HaMachnes. But as we'll see, that there's a difference in the signal. They're going to give a different signal based on these two things. And that's what it says. V'saki ben, they will blow in these, they'll use these trumpets, and Kol Ha'eda will come to you, the entire community. I'm not sure if Kol Ha'eda means literally every person. It might mean only something like, sometimes Ha'eda means something like the important people, the representatives of the community. And they will come together to the Pesach Chol Moed, which was the place set aside. So obviously this was done in advance. They set aside the place to come together. That's called Ohel Moed, means also something like a meeting place. So they might have, that's where they had the meetings. Now, so that's the regular, so that the first kind of tekiah. Then, Ve'im Ba'achas Hiskoi, so we just heard that there's two chatzotzers, there's two trumpets, and obviously we'll be able to hear, even far away or however far the people were, that they were blowing with both. But if they blow only with one, then not everyone will come, not the Kol Ha'eda, but the Nesi'im, the leaders, the Rosh Alfei Yisrael, the leaders or the generals, we could call them sometimes, if Alfei Yisrael means like a military division, they will come to Moshe. So that's like a lesser, it's not such a general assembly, it's an assembly of the leaders. Then it says that, so that's the Mikra Aida, right? We're calling the Aida. Now there's the description of the Masa HaMachnas, how does the sounding of the trumpets work for Masa HaMachnas. So it says, Iskatem Teruah, if you blow one Teruah, and it might be a different sound. Of course, Chazal interpret Teruah by Shofar as a different kind of sound. So they understand Katem as one kind of a simple sound and Teruah as a more complex sound. Or there's a, we've famously forgot or don't know exactly how to do it, but through some kind of more complex sound. And that seems to be what it says here, because it says later that this tisku velociters, it repeats itself. For the hakala, for the getting together, just tekiah, so some kind of simple sound, or we could just interpret as just making noise, just the sound. And then teruah is when there's some kind of elaboration, some kind of complexity in the sound, and therefore there is, that is the sound that they made. It's going to be a sign for the masa machnis, for the travel, and then it's described how the process of travel is sort of formed, is sort of led by these teruahs. So there's one teruah, and then the camps who are encamped in the front, Kaidma and Mizrach in the east, will travel. They're the first. Then the second teruah, and then the camps encamping to the right, or Durim, or to the south, will travel. And it repeats itself. And that we don't have yet over here the next two machnas or the mishkan, which goes after them. We'll see in the next part. In the next part of the chapter, there is a description of the full, all four or five parts of the travel. But here it seems like it's just maybe we could understand ourselves that later they will do another tekiah, or once everyone saw the first two goings, so they followed along. They don't need a teruah for that. Now there's a command, who is the one doing the blowing? Who is the one doing the sounding? It's Pnei Aharon, it's the Kehanim, that's their job. So interesting, they have this extra job, although this is not like a job of the Kodesh, it's nothing to do with the Mishkan seemingly. It's their job to blow the Shofar. And this will be L'dor Sechem, this will work, this will be a law forever for your generations. And what will be the law? It says like this, when there will be a war. So here we can imagine that this is all about war, since we've been interpreting all of the story of the Machnas as a preparation for war. And these Tkiah, as also, they need an alarm to get together the army to come together, either for a gathering or for the masa, which is basically a war. So they're saying that this will not only be here now, will be ever. When there will be a war in your land, for any enemy, you will blow with chatzaritzer. But here there's something new added. It says, so here it seems that this sounding is not only a practical thing, as we would have understood until now, but it has a ritual aspect, or it has a prayerful aspect. It also causes that they will be remembered by God or in front of God and will be helped from their enemies. And possibly this is also why it's the job of the Kehanim. That's why the Kehanim are the ones that have to do this, because they are the ones that are responsible for prayer, for things that have to do with receiving the blessing of God for that, what they're doing. And then we see another thing, that this is not only for times of war, it's also for times of happiness. Days of happiness, it doesn't give an explicit date when, or me'adim, which are set days of happiness, right? We assume that this means Yom Tov, you will blow a chatzotzeres, on your sacrifices, on the oil or on the shlum, which are the main sacrifices, and also we could still interpret these also as having some kind of practical effect because of the reason, which is that firstly, we can understand one thing that Ibn Ezra says, that this Yom Simcha might mean just the day where they leave, when they come back triumphantly from the war. So Yom Tzora that's described there is the going out to war, we can understand that Yom Simcha is just the return from the war, which is probably also, reality, we also see that all the Me'adim, the Set Yom Tov, are basically days in which we came back from your war, like in some sense Pesach, or the later holidays are more clear, Hanukkah and Purim, which are not mentioned in Torah, but they also have the same structure that we won a war or some kind of war, and therefore we announced it. Or even Me'adim, even if they're a set time, just like three times a year where we have a Moed, there's still a need for announcing it, right? It's just a gathering. It's just one more instance of gathering. So we can understand these last two things, which are the Torahs, as just another two instances of the Tekiah, which is and we can see the difference in Trua and Trua, right? The Trua, which is Namasa Machnes, which has for war. So Trua is this is where we get the idea Trua, there's a more sad or more serious kind of sound because it's the preparing for war. And then the happiness, which is the Tkia, and that's where you have Tkia, and that's the, like, Lemikraida, which is a happy occasion. It's not a scary occasion. It's not a tense occasion. And then we could also understand that these, in a celebration for a holiday, we also need to call the people. Like, you have to know to come. So it's It could be understood in the same way, although it says, which again adds the, we call it the vertical aspect here, the divine aspect, it still might have this simple function. Also, Rish Chodesh, we could understand, as it said in the Mishnah, that they blew Shofar at Rish Chodesh, and just, it seems like just to let people know that it was Rish Chodesh, since Rish Chodesh is something that the people have to know, the Bezdin decides that it's Rish Chodesh, at least that's how we know from Chazal. It doesn't say in the Pesuk, but it might be Rem is over here with the Tekia, and therefore we have to let everyone know that's Rosh Chodesh, and that sets the dates for the holidays to come. So, and then there's an ending. This is, there's a signature in this Parsha Nishem Lekechem, like many Parshias in Vayikra Bamidbar. Now we have, after all the law, so this is why this is another place where we could start the story if we want. After all the laws, we have the actual beginning of their travel, the first travel, the first Masa, and it gives us a date, the second year, the second month, the 20th of the month, so 5 days after Pesach Shani. Now, Le'onan, the cloud went up from the Mishkan, and the people traveled after it from Midbar Sinai, and they went to Midbar Puran, and this was their first travel, Api Hashem B'Yad Moshe. And it gives us, on the first travel, of course, we don't get this repeat for every one, but in Parshas Masa, we get something like 40 or 42 different stops that they made. We don't get this one, this elaboration for every one, but for the first one, we get the whole exact process. And when we read it, it's Dominic to read it in the Nischa Vashira, because I think this is a poetic, it's not adding any information, it's just adding the poetry of the great celebration, sort of like they're actually starting to travel. We have Degel Machne Yehuda, which is led by Nachshon ben Minodov, together with Yisaschar, with Nisana ben Suar, together with Zvilma Saliv ben Chayle. And now we have the process of the Mishkan, right? So we discussed that the Mishkan had Gershon and Meruri, which were charged on, respectively, on the wooden parts, the hard parts of the Mishkan, the soft parts of the Mishkan, we can call them, the fabrics, the areas. And then Kahath, which is in charge of the vessel, the internal parts of the Mishkan. So first, the first step is the Mishkan gets taken down, and Gershon and Merari travel with it, with their agolos, which we've discussed earlier. Then, so that's first, right? First, the first machna is Degel Machne Bnei Yehuda, that's the Chodim Kedma, which we discussed, they go first. Then the Mishkan, number two. And then Degel Machne Reuven, which is Taimona, the right, on the right side, on the south, which is with Elitza ben Shader, the leader for Reuven, with Shimon, Shlomil ben Zirsade, with God, Eliezer ben Deuel. And then after the second one, the Kahas, who carried the Mishkan here, Kalnoisi HaMishkan, means the vessels of the Mishkan, traveled, and then says, Vekimu Es HaMishkan Ad Bohem. So in other words, we can understand that the reason why this was split in two steps, in other words, the Bnei Gershon and Merari are traveling with the building of the Mishkan, a step before Bnei Kahas are coming after the next group of people with the vessels of the Mishkan, is so that when they arrive at their stopping station, then the Bnei Gershon and Merari will be setting up the Mishkan, and then by the time the Kahas arrives, there'll be a Mishkan in which to put in the vessels of the Mishkan. Okay, and then we have the third one, Degel Machne Bnei Ephraim, traveling with Elishim ben Amir, together with Manasseh, with their leader Gamil ben Bedotzer, together with Binyamin Avidan ben Gedoini. And then the last one is Bnei Dan in the back. And it gives us a title, Ma'asev Chal HaMachnes, the gatherer of all the Machnes. So we can understand that something like the Machne Bnei Dan, this is called the vanguard and the rear, right? These are specific functions within a camp that travels. Then the first people have a certain function, and the middle is like the main body. And then the rear has the function of taking care of whatever the rear takes care of. It's called Ma'asav al-Chal HaMachnes. So Rashi says, like, people lost something, they would find it. In other words, it's protecting their rear. And together with their leader, Achiaz ben Amishadai, together with them, Osho, with Bagil ben Ochron, together with Naftali, with Achira ben Enan. These are Eile Ma'asav ben Yisrael, Tzavoy Sam Vayisoy. Now, there is three interesting pieces still in this chapter. One is an interesting dialogue between Moshe and his father-in-law, Chayvav, the son of Reuel. Of course, a new name. We've heard of him in Parshas Yisro, his name was Yisro. Here his name is Chayvav, the son of Reuel. And Moshe asks him to travel with them. He says, we're going to travel to the place where Hashem has promised to us, which he told us we'll give it to you. Come to us and we'll give you, we'll be good to you, because Hashem has promised us good. And his father-in-law says, no, I will not go, I will go to my place, to my birthplace. And Moshe again begs him, please don't leave us, because you have known our camping in the desert. In other words, it seems like Yisrael was their side of guide in the desert. We learned also in Parshas Shemois, Moshe was taking the Tzon of Yisrael, Achar HaMidbar. Seems like these were locations which the Midianites, or the people, Yisrael, who was a leader of some sort in Midian, a Kohen Midian, right? A priest of Midian, must have known about how to navigate and so on. So he says, Ve'Yisrael and Anayim, you'll be eyes. In other words, you'll be a guide for us. And if you come with us, he promises, the good that God gives us, we will give to you good. It doesn't give us the conclusion of this dialogue. Of course, in Parshas Yisro, it says explicitly that Yisro, which might have, yes or not, been the same as Chayvav, has went home. Over here, it seems that he stayed. And also in Sefer Yeshua, it seems like the children of Chayvav, Chayse and Moshe, explicitly are said to get their prize. So this Vaitavnulach, this that Moshe promised him a part in the land, was fulfilled in Sefer Yeshua. So it's not clear what's the story with this dialogue. There's some mystery in this. And then we have a report. They travel from Har Hashem, from Midbar Sinai, right, for 3 days. The Oren is traveling 3 days in front of them. Lo Selem Nuch to find. So the Oren, this is another kind of difficulty, because a minute ago we had the Bnei Kehas, who are the ones carrying the Oren, and the Mishkan, as it said here, traveling in the middle. And here suddenly it's, they're traveling 3 days ahead. So there's another mystery or question about what's going on. And the cloud of Hashem of them is on top of them as they travel. Another, how does this exactly connect with the Mishkan and so on? That's another question. Now, we have the end. And I think that this is the way we should read all these, the next few chapters, the next few parshas have things like this. They're like somewhat fragmentary reports of the travels in the Mishkan, in the Midbar, of the wars that they had, of what's going on. We don't have a full account of this. This is why I said in my beginning of Parshas of Sefer Midbar that there is a story of the wars of Moshe in the desert on the way to Eretz Yisrael, which seems to not be entirely part of the story that we know. We're missing something. We're missing the basic narrative of the story. It seems to not be important. In any case, we get a poetic report, a very poetic report, and we say this, of course, when we take out the Torah. They even said, and when the Oren was traveling, so Moshe had these two statements, two poetic, both are said in the meter of poetry. And the Oren travels, Moshe says, Kuma Hashem, so that's like Hashem represented, and the Oren stands up, and his enemies spread out, and enemies run away from him. And when the Oren sits back down, or gets back to its place, Moshe says, Shuva Hashem, so rest Hashem, or something, come back down, Rivva Yisalf Yisroel, along with the Rivva Yisalf Yisroel, with the armies of the Eden, which are now resting. So that's showing how the Oren, with Moshe's speech, is leading the wars and the starting and stopping the traveling and encamping of the Mishkan, of the Midbar. So that is this chapter.